We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
Dr. Michael Cummings is joining us live, Vice Chair of Psychiatry for UB and Associate Medical Director of ECMC. Mike, we're glad you could be with us this morning. We've all been living this pandemic for the past year, and it's affected us in some ways more than others for a full year now. When you look back to the events of last March, before we even had a case here, what are you thinking?
Well, it's been quite the ride, right? I think many of us talk about, it's almost like the last year sort of didn't exist. I was looking at Facebook yesterday, and it'll mark the 1 year anniversary of me not traveling to Brooklyn to see my patients who I treat down in New York City and having to do that via Zoom for the last calendar year. So it's been a monumental time, full of a lot of challenges, full of a lot of tragedy. I think I mentioned to Brian, I was unfortunate enough to get COVID myself and get hospitalized for about 5 days at ECMC and require oxygen for a month and a half after that. And, you know, so it's been a struggle for us all, but I think our vulnerable populations, our elderly, our children, our developmentally disabled individuals, it's really hit, you know, the hardest.
Yeah, I remember talking with you around that time a year ago today when we were looking at maybe the mental aspect of this and how stressful it can be, kind of the unknown. And I have to say, I might be more worried about that aspect of the pandemic now than I even was back then when you're dealing with so much of the unknown. When we start to look at some of the factors from a year of living like this, I was just looking at something from Canada, their statistics office, out with a report on deaths in 2020. And so they're saying more recently, the number of excess deaths has been higher than the number of deaths due to COVID affecting younger populations, suggesting that indirect impacts of the pandemic are now at play. What are these indirect impacts that you're seeing in your work?
Yeah, so I mean, absolutely. I mean, we don't have good numbers on suicides yet, but I'm certain we'll see that they have gone up. Certainly drug overdoses. If you look at data from May of 2019 through 20, so only half of the pandemic, rates are up 20%, the highest recorded number of overdose deaths in the United States in the history of the United States. So I think we're seeing a lot. You know, we're seeing stress in parents. We're seeing stress in workplaces. We're seeing burnout from healthcare workers. We're seeing, and you're right to point out that it seems to be affecting children and young adults as the most vulnerable populations. Upwards to 42% of adults, particularly young adults, said that they were depressed or anxious in a survey in December of 2020. That is up from 11% from the year before. So, I mean, it's a huge increase. I think also what we're seeing for our least resilient populations being our kids is, you know, the huge impact of not having school. And there's a lot of reasons to not be in school, but I don't think there's a single one that at this point justifies the developmental losses that our children are going through that are not necessarily recoverable. Like they may be for a 40-year-old who, you know, has a year that's a little bit different than prior years.
You know, and as things reopen, even schools too, I mean, not everybody just springs right back, right? There's things to watch for. You can't just, you know, flip a switch and say, okay, we're all back.
Transitions in, I mean, there's all kinds of changes going. Even in healthcare, to bring it, you know, we've been doing a lot of telepsych and a lot of telephonic phone calls. And it has its place, and it certainly let us reach people who couldn't come in or wouldn't come in and try and keep the doors open as much as possible. But that's a lot different than having patients come to your office. Even the logistics of having patients, having a full office with someone who's potentially you know, has the fever. All those things have to be kind of thought of as we re-enter the school, the workforce, you know, the hospitals. It's a big task and a big challenge.
You know, you mentioned getting back and how, especially in young adults, in kids, how they get back. I was thinking about this yesterday, especially for kindergartners, first graders who have been remote this year. And there might be some who have been in a fully remote setting while other of their classmates have been able to go to school 3, 4, 5 days a week, and how much further behind they're going to be when they're all in the classroom together, hopefully, at this time next year. And that brings a whole host of problems, you know, not just academically, but in their emotional state. What has been your advice to parents of things that they should be looking for, especially in their kids, as we kind of enter this 1 year, in terms of whether their behavior has changed or what should they be doing to help kids through this time?
Well, first, we need to be having open, honest conversations with our children, you know, not behind closed doors. We shouldn't be, if we're having as adults stress around relationships, around work, we shouldn't be airing them out loudly with kids in earshot while we're trying to have them understand things that they very well may not understand, particularly that 5-year-old you're talking about, that 6-year-old who doesn't have a different background. Then we're always looking for typical signs of crying, annoying behavior, increased sadness, decreased concentration, decreased attention to things, change in eating or sleeping patterns. Certainly anyone who starts talking about not wanting to be around or frank suicide, that's a psychiatric emergency that needs to be dealt with immediately with, you know, with your therapist, if you have one, with your primary care provider, with crisis services, with Erie County Medical Center's help center, any of these things that you can avail yourself, several of them 24 hours a day, those things have to be treated as a medical emergency.
Do you think it's likely some people will need to seek help, you know, as we go into this next phase, even if they didn't need help in the past year?
Of course. I mean, Brian already talked about, you know, that uncertainty and the anxiety associated with the unknown. And there's a lot of unknowns right now, right? There's 3 different vaccines of various efficacies and unclear who can get them and when they can get them. There is, you know, will I be immune for 90 days or will I be immune for 90 years or somewhere in between? Can I make travel plans? Will my job even be there? A lot of people who are in the public service industry, you know, I mean, their jobs may just simply not exist, and what will they be doing? So I think we're going to see a whole host of anxiety-related increases from the mental health world as you know, we re-enter kind of, I don't want to say business as usual because who knows what the new norm is, but as we, you know, kind of reopen up things on a much larger scale, which is certain to happen with the availability of the vaccine, we'll see a lot of folks struggling with that. And that's people having to take their own mental health pulse, right, of just, am I not sleeping well? Am I more irritable? Am I drinking and using other substances more than I had in the past? And if so, who can I reach out to? I would argue your primary care doctor would be the first step. Who can I reach out to make sure that I'm on the right path for myself?
We're speaking with Dr. Michael Cummings, Vice Chair of Psychiatry at the University of Buffalo, also Associate Medical Director at ECMC, about the pandemic. We're 1 year into the pandemic, as defined as a pandemic by the World Health Organization, the psychological, the mental impacts of the past year. And I mentioned, Dr. Cummings, at the beginning that I'm maybe more worried about that now than I ever was at any point during the year. And part of that is some of the guidance that was coming out from the CDC a little earlier this week when it comes to people who have been vaccinated. We have these miracle vaccines that are out there, tremendously effective. A year ago, we've been playing some of the clips. The hope was in 18 months, we can have a vaccine that is, you know, 50% effective at preventing the virus. Well, you know, here we are, 20% of the people have a dose of the vaccine in New York State, and it's almost 100% effective at stopping you from getting the virus. It is amazing, yet it seems very cautious what the CDC is putting out there, still saying, well, you have this vaccine, but we don't want you in any sort of large group. We still need you to wear a mask. And from everything I'm hearing from people, it's, well, what's the point? You know, why get the vaccine? If you're telling vaccinated people to do this, are we ever going to reach the end? Are you hearing some of that? And do you feel some of that frustration and maybe that weighing on people, especially as we hit this year milestone?
Well, I think so. And I think some of it also is based on kind of inconsistencies. I mean, first of all, like, you know, it certainly shows what the science community can do with industry when they put their minds to it to create a vaccine or three vaccines this quickly and have the level of effectiveness. You know, I think, you know, state to state, I mean, let's talk honestly. Some of the restrictions, while they make a lot of sense medically, others don't. There seems to be a lot of inconsistency as to, you know, you can catch COVID here, but why can't you catch it here? And I think a lot of people are frustrated, particularly in New York State, over that. However, I think the CDC's hesitancy has more to do with the fact that we, because the vaccine is so new and COVID is so new, that we simply don't know how long you're going to be immune after you've had COVID or after you've had the vaccine. So that's why they're saying things like, well, if you've had it within 90 days, now once that first cohort of people in the trials and people who've had early can be tested, you'll see it saying, well, if you've had it in 120 days, if you've had it within 180 days. But right now, it's so new, there's simply not that data to say, well, you've been vaccinated, so we're sure you're good to go for the next 3 years, because we just don't know. So it is a little cautious. I think you'll see it opening up more and more. But I think the frustration that people are feeling is, one, just burnout from this, right? I mean, you've been doing everything right. And even though there's been a tremendous number of people who have been COVID positive and who've passed away in New York State, even Erie County, again, I had a severe case of it. I wouldn't wish it on anyone. But that said, you know, we're talking about, you know, 1,600 deaths in Erie County, 67,000 people who have had it. That's a huge number. But there's a lot of people who don't actually know someone who's had a serious case. They may know someone who knows someone, but there's a lot of people who haven't experienced that themselves. And so I think it does become a little bit more difficult. I expect that we'll see those lengths of time grow as the data grows. Right now, the biggest challenge is simply getting vaccine into people and putting, you know, the vaccine in doctors' hands so that they can vaccinate their patients in a way that is probably the most efficient, as opposed to our current pattern of rules and regulations for how we're doling out the vaccine.
You know, we're just getting the word, too, in the last few days that some people, the fully vaccinated, can hug again. I mean, something that's been absent for the past year. Can you talk about what that means?
Well, you know, physical closeness is a huge deal, whether we're talking about our elderly population, our children, or anyone in between. I mean, just think about that. I was watching a news clip last night. A woman in Canada had just gotten her vaccine. It's like, you know, I haven't touched a loved one in over a year. And you think about how important touch is with emotional well-being and attachment, particularly for our children, for our elderly grandparents and whatnot. It's a huge deal. But it also shows a big disconnect because, you know, people are reading that and there's a whole group of people saying, oh, my God, it's now okay to hug. And a whole other group of people saying, yeah, we've been doing this for a year and I haven't gotten sick. And I think that is, you know, also some of this COVID burnout that we're seeing of you know, restrictions that may or may not have been followed by the majority of the population without a lot of clear consequence to them directly, even though there's a course or a reason for those rules.
And I'm sure that's something, you know, those different mindsets that we're going to want to pick your brain about in the coming weeks. But we thank you so much for the time this morning. Dr. Michael Cummings is Vice Chair of Psychiatry for the University of Buffalo, Associate Medical Director at ECMC.